CKUTT 90.3 FM.
Another reliable communication.
I am Maya Khaldi, and I am a singer and a composer. I live between Jerusalem and Ramallah. I work a lot in Jerusalem. So this album is called Another World or Other World. I still haven't decided. It's not printed yet, so I still have time. But in Arabic, it's Alam Tani. So it's I just need to translate it or decide on the translation. And this project is my first solo album, and it's basically based or inspired by tracks that I've gotten from the archive in the Popular Arts Center in Ramallah. They have archived, gone around Palestine and recorded musicians and singers in villages since the late 80s and up to like beginning of the 2000s. And so they have this brilliant library that probably no one else has, and it's like a, you know, a treasure. And so I went to it a few years back, and I think I was looking for something that's familiar to me, that I can relate to, because I had been doing a lot of Western music, and I hadn't connected with Palestinian folklore or Arabic traditional music. So I tried to connect with it, and through it I thought, okay, I want to learn it and I want to learn about it, but that's not really how I am. I don't know how to just learn something. I like to experiment with it. So I really just started imagining how this folklore, how these sounds that I have could sound like in, I don't know, 50 years or, you know, whatever, 20 years, or some kind of future, you know. Realizing that the soundscape now, you know, the contemporary soundscape is like really, is really, really influential to probably all of us, but if you live a little bit in Ramallah, you hear the sounds of building all the time. Ramallah is like a really new city in the past, you know, after the Oslo Accord, it started to really build up, and now it's really just full of apartment buildings all around. And so, yeah, in every neighborhood, there's a building being built. And so you really hear a lot of that, and it really influences you. So it's kind of my, you know, it's kind of my reminiscing of a past, trying to understand a past while being completely influenced by the soundscape of today, but also trying to grasp some kind of future, you know, some kind of hope, maybe even, you know. It's we, you know, in Palestine, we've realized that our folklore is in danger, you know, like our identity, like our culture, like our, you know, agriculture, like our language, like our cuisine, and I think people realized that a few years back. And and our generation kind of tried to preserve it. So there are lots of people who are trying to learn it and sing it, you know, and preserve it and keep it alive. But to me, I couldn't connect so much with that. It felt like it was like going to a museum. It's a bit sad to me, you know. It's like going to a museum where things are just standing still, you know, not changing, not moving, and being more observed than they are alive. So I felt, okay, how can I be alive with this? How can this be alive with me? And so I started working on this album, and later on in the process, Sarun Amshasha joined me, who's the producer. She's the sound engineer and the producer. And it's going to be released through her label, which is called Tawleef. And I'm the first album on that label. With you. So this track is called Zagharit, or Zagharitu, and Zagharit is what is an expression that we make while celebrating, but also while grieving. And I don't know if you know it. It's when women sort of do this sound. Yeah.
Hey, ha, واحنا بنات القدس بنرفع الراسي. Hey, ha, وزينا بهالدنيا ما في ناسي. Hey, ha, ارفعوا راسكم وقولوا.
So it's from the area. It's from the bigger, you know, MENA area, and there are different techniques around it. So you either move your tongue up and down, or there's also you move it sideways, you know. And I thought it was very, it's always been very interesting. The one time my brother got married, we, you know, there's a tradition that the men are outside kind of making the deal and the women are inside kind of waiting for a sign that the deal's done. And it's very patriarchal, but you know, you go with it in that moment. And so, you know, when we hear that it's, you know, that they have decided to accept and give away their daughter to my brother, we all do the Zagharit. And we're inside one room, and we are about, I don't know, 15 women. And the sound is shocking. It's really strong. It's really, really strong. And it's so, everyone is on their own pitch, but it sounds amazing. And it's, you know, the vibrations are like in everyone's bodies. And so, I've always thought that was really physically effective. I don't know how else to say it. And so I had to do something with it.
La 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 la
It's really clear to me that the more people know about what's going on, the stronger we are. The more people talk about this, the stronger we are, the more supported we are, and the more supported we feel. I mean, it's socially, musicians, like artists, like writers, like, you know, are always looked up to. You know, they're always considered, you know, so they have followings of some sort. You know, maybe they are not, you know, a pop star. You know, they don't have to be, but, you know, we all know that we are performers, that we get on stage and there's a crowd of people, you know, in front of us. And we have so much power with that. You know, we have so much power when we're standing in front of a group of people, or when we have a following of some sort, you know. And so talking about it and expressing our own opinions about it, even, you know, is a huge solidarity, a huge effort towards solidarity. The Zionist regime doesn't want us to have a culture. They don't want us to be musicians. They don't want us to be artists. They don't want us to be free in any way, you know, to express in any way, to be there, to be heard in any way. It doesn't matter if we're talking about what's going on or if we're not, you know. It doesn't matter if we are political musicians or if we write songs about what's happening or we write classical piano music. It really doesn't matter. They, you know, to them, we are a threat, but our mere existence is a threat. And so I really feel that it doesn't matter what I do, just as long as, or what we do as a community, as musicians here in Palestine, just as long as we keep doing what we do, you know, we are quite isolated, you know. I'm from Jerusalem, and so I kind of have a sort of ironic privilege over West Bankers. You know, people from the West Bank are isolated. They are surrounded by a wall. They need a lot of effort and application and to get visas to leave the country. They don't have an airport to leave straight from, and so you need the means to travel to Jordan and then to from Jordan to wherever you're going if you have obtained a visa, and it's isolating. You know, you can't play with any musicians you want to play with. You can't play with any band you want to play with. I'm from Jerusalem, and I am not allowed to live in Ramallah. Well, I can live wherever I want, but I can realize that my residency, my Jerusalem residency, could be taken away from me after 6 months of living otherwhere. And so I'm also kind of bound to a place that maybe not necessarily I find a lot of musicians to play with, or the specific kind of musicians that I want to play with, or the studio that I want to record in, or you know, or a studio to rehearse in, you know, because it's so expensive for Palestinians in living in under the, you know, the occupation regime. So it's just, for me, it's enough that I'm out here, that I make music, that I perform, that I talk about who I am and where I'm from, that I try to leave when I can, that I rehearse, that I compose. It doesn't have to be profound. It's so simple. I think providing the opportunities for performing, for learning, for collaborating, for recording, and everywhere in the world is I think is really important. Giving the space, or, you know, talking about the space, or calling out, you know, is a lot of support for Palestinian musicians. I think there are amazing Palestinian musicians, like crazy talented. And not because they're musicians, because they're Palestinian musicians, because they're just simply people who are amazing, talented musicians, you know, and they do not get the opportunities at all, you know. There's a musician that I collaborate with often. Her name is Dina Schille. She's a pianist and a composer. She's a classical composer, and it's really interesting what she does. It's very Palestinian in a very non-Palestinian way, you know. You know, just on the piano, which is not Palestinian, but it's her on the piano, and it's very it's very her. And she composes for different, for not only for piano, but she composes for strings and different ensembles. There is really the best Arab musician really of this time, and I couldn't say it differently. But there's Camelia Jubran. Camelia Jubran is just, yeah, the most, I think, significant Palestinian artist right now. She is she's a composer, and she's a brilliant singer and a oud player, and she has been working on music since forever. She started out with a group called Sabrin for 20 years, and they have amazing albums that are still relevant until this day. But she, after leaving them, she started working on her solo work and collaborating with other musicians. And she has a few albums. I wouldn't say, I don't know how many, but each album is better than the other. I mean, each album is more avant-garde or more exquisite than the other. It is really important that we all, as musicians, realize how much power we have within our communities. I think that we don't have to write political music, or we don't have to talk about things so directly, but as musicians in our communities, we are heard, you know, more than maybe other people. And that gives us a power to change, and that we're all connected some way, somehow, all over the world. You know, we have that one thing in common, and we understand each other that way. And I think that gives us also a sense of solidarity already with each other. But imagine really going the extra, you know, step, or the extra, and really trying to support each other in what we do, with what we do.
CKUT. I don't know. But now fix it. CKUT. the number one radio station in Montreal. We give you the sun, the moon, the rain, the stars and the mountain. CKUT give you the word.
Whose data? Our data. When you're not paying for a product, you are the product. Especially in web and email services, where multinationals compete to manage your communication so they can make a profit off of the private communication you are producing. Coombit is a worker cooperative trying to help small organizations or individuals get their email, website creation, and website hosting services off corporate services such as Google. For more information, contact us at coombit.org or email at info@coombit.org. That's K-O-U-M-B-I-T. We are not on Facebook.
I'm going to avoid spreading COVID-19. It's easy. I'll wear a mask in crowded places. If I have symptoms, I'll self-isolate and do a rapid test. If I test positive, I'll stay home for at least 5 days. And for the next 5 days, I won't visit anyone who's at risk. I'll avoid social events like festivals and gatherings. And I'll limit my activities to only the most essential, all while wearing a mask and staying 2 meters away from others. The virus is still out there, so we have to be careful. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.
Yes, it's that.
Time.
To sit back, relax, and listen to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.
This is a show from Radio. We're a group of stations bringing new and forgotten ways of making radio to our listeners.
Delta to Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Each week we give artists the challenge to make radio that works across the whole of Europe and beyond.
Delta to Yankee, Juliet Romeo.
Are you up for it?
Welcome to the Radio Valerie Dream Mail. Please tell us your dreams, as many as you'd like, and leave your name if you'd like to be credited in the piece. Thank you.
Hi, I did have a dream last night.
So I'm having this dream where, like...
I had a recurring dream.
A recurring dream?
I was having this state of slime dream.
Yeah, snake dream.
Oh, yeah, so I had this dream once.
One of my most vivid dreams...
Hi, I'm just ringing in regards about my dream that I had last night.
So, I only had this dream a couple of nights ago.
Here's my dream.
I had a dream.
This is a dream I had all the time when I was little. It was like a recurring dream.
When I was a kid, right, I used to have this recurring dream. Oh, I had another dream last night.
A joke?
Yeah, so I had this dream once. I was sleeping.
I had a dream, but pretty much I had a really vivid dream.
So I dreamt I was a doctor in a hospital.
I had this dream that I had a few times where
I had a dream. I can't quite remember, but there were snakes involved and snakes biting a cat or maybe my foot or both at different times, but there were snakes.
So there were these chickens, hundreds of chickens. There were seagulls circling around my head.
There was a dog there too. I think it was my dog. It was black and white.
Hundreds of chickens. And they were all like neatly aisled for kilometres in the distance.
I was going to the supermarket and there was a product which was a mixture of ham, chicken and dragon.
And it came with me. And then there was a black and white cat as well.
Being chased by two wolves.
I was swimming with two dolphins. And
eaten alive by an animal.
And we were swimming around. It's like I could breathe underwater. And we were swimming through houses and exploring. It was like some kind of post-apocalyptic dream or something.
So we're traveling on this rocket called Turtle, the back of it, and we're like traveling along one of like the Mediterranean.
But then out of nowhere, behind the rock, a giant scorpion appears and eats one of my friends.
And huge dog, which was black and white, so it was a good red, came, and I realised that the cat and the dog had made this new dog, which was huge and feral. I was scared of it.
There was a little dog there, a Jack Russell.
All the snakes in the world were after one thing.
A rat.
The rub the back of their head on the knuckle hair.
It was like Gamera, but not.
And then we were walking the dogs, the two little dogs that I wasn't scared of.
A flock of magpies on the green field. And they're kind of looking a bit scary.
You know, just walking down the roads or on a train, perhaps. And I'd look behind me and they'd be chasing me and they'd be stood upright. And I'd be running away from them. And as they got up to me, right, they'd start sort of knock me over and start eating me from the feet upwards. Right. And that's when I'd wake up.
Each chicken was kind of sitting on like a metal square, sort of like a lid to a present box. In front of each hen was a miniature clawfoot bath. I filled each little bath with grain, and as soon as I finished pouring, the chickens would begin to eat. I remember thinking about how well-trained they were, and I was looking down a line of slightly still chickens, and they were all waiting quietly for their meals. The farmer said, like, oh, I've got the most obedient chickens in all of Australia.
I was pregnant, and it was like my pregnant belly was just attached to me by an umbilical cord. So I was kind of carrying this belly in my arms, and then it turned into the white cat.
Then the next task for me to do was to clean their feet, and the only way to do it was with ear. I unscrewed a few bottles and just covered the chickens in both straws. They're looking at me with these red eyes. Behind me, my mum's gone. She's not on the train anymore. And all I know is that the birds took her and they're not giving her back.
With a big white cat, and the cat kept on trying to get away, and I was trying to kind of calm it down and was holding it quite hard so that it wouldn't jump out of my arms and kind of rip the umbilical cord out of me.
To much shock and horror, I am thrown back by this scorpion.
The chickens behind me started to squawk, and it was the first time I'd even heard them. I stopped and turned around, and then I realized the chickens I poured the beer on were beginning to sizzle. These lines steam kind of whirled from their heads, and they were just squealing in pain. And it was such a hot day that the chickens were boiling in the beer, and they were all going to die because I poured them for their feathers and not their feet.
And I battled scorpions for hours upon hours on end.
So we're traveling on this rock called Turtle.
I had a dream about the pretty cat.
And then some more of my friends came down to the beach. And they saw me battling this giant scorpion, and I tell them, no, turn back, go away, don't come near me and this giant scorpion.
I looked back at the line of dry birds and saw them shivering in fear, waiting for me to come to them and mistakenly cook them. I just couldn't believe I'd killed these birds, yet being so beautifully placid and quiet, they just let me do it.
I realised that I'm inside the mind of the turtle, and it's like this really cool, chilled out funk turtle. The funk turtle is kind of part of this whole kind of conscious.
We were friends, me and this rat, and I had to say goodbye to it. It was quite a little kind of round rat, and I kept kind of shaking it off, but it kept grabbing me and like biting the bottoms of my feet, and as I walked away it kept on trying to kind of come with me, and I was kind of laughing and trying to shake it off without hurting it.
And then I became the dog. I took the dog's perspective and I started saying, no, he's not! No, he's not! Over and over. But I jumped into the pool with him. And whenever I could hear the family's voices and chants coming through, I'd say it again.
And then I asked my mum for some help, obviously. She was kind of carrying the cat, which was attached to me.
The turtle was kind of talking to me. Not talking to me, like, kind of like telepathically. And, you know, he's like, yeah, it's cool. It's, you know, it's all good here. Chill out and relax and stuff. And, you know, just found that in his mind for a while, just feeling calmed and relaxed and, you know, peace and part of it, something large.
Then we got chased by a shark and the dolphins abandoned me.
I was with my mom going to the circus. I was about 7 years old. And somehow I locked myself in the porta potty. And when I woke up, I was really scared. Going to an ATM and I'm waiting for the money to come out, and instead of just one note, I can see maybe a bunch of notes that, you know, there's some kind of fault with the ATM, and I could grab a whole fist full of $50 notes, whereas I'd only wanted to get one out. But then I'm left with the dilemma of whether I should take them or not, because I know that the bank has my details and that there's cameras and that it's fraud, and it's a crippling decision. So I was really scared that they were gonna kill me. And so I kept having to, and then I stole something to wear, but I got found out. It's a pretty scary dream.
We all kind of like start panicking because there's nothing we can do. And
I'm about 5 years old, and my mom and I are on a miniature train going around. There's a green field to the left. There's a flock of magpies on the green field, and they're kind of looking a bit scary. They're looking at me with these red eyes, and it's maybe the scariest thing that I could have seen as 3-4-year-old eyes. And then behind me, my mom's gone. She's not on the train anymore, and all I know is that the birds took her, and I'm not giving her back. It was terrifying.
I'm back in high school, and it's the beginning of a class, and I'm at my locker. Haven't got any books. I haven't got a key to my locker, and the classes are starting. I don't know where the class is, what room it's in. I don't know which class I'm supposed to be in, what subjects I'm supposed to be learning at that moment. And I'm just wandering the corridors in a blind panic, worried, thinking about it, that this knowledge is dripping away from me. So that I'm more worried about not knowing some piece of school knowledge, that I'm more worried about not knowing that than I am about being eaten alive by an animal.
I looked back at the line of dry birds and saw them shivering in fear, waiting for me to come to them and mistakenly cook them.
I can't describe the horror I experienced. No puedo describir el horror que siento. We run, terrified, trying to find for a place to hide. It's so dark and luminous, it's like a space ride. Corremos aterrorizados, tratando de encontrar un lugar a donde escondernos. Todo está oscuro, pero iluminado, como una montaña rusa en el espacio.
It's always quite troubling, there's that feeling like the teeth are coming out. It feels, it doesn't just look like it's happening, it kind of feels like, you know, the vacuum is holding the teeth in place in the mouth. And as you pull, it kind of, they just slowly kind of are drawn out and air filled into the gums where the teeth were. And it worries me more and more. I mean, sometimes it's just that the teeth kind of fall out one by one. So it's like they're kind of showering out of the mouth onto the floor, and then you kind of walk on them, and on the feet kind of crunch them underneath. Yeah. It's not very pleasant in these dreams. I usually wake up in like a cold sweat. worries. My mum and I are on a miniature train going around.
I was wanting to check my mum's house. Their parents didn't want them to.
And I was waiting in the hospital bed and my waters had kind of broken.
And she's rocking back and forth and she's rocking a baby and then like I realised that the baby is me.
最近見た夢の中で私は母と舞台を見に行きました。
And then I need to go to the bathroom and my pregnant belly was just attached to me by an umbilical cord.
I gave birth at my old high school in an auditorium in front of thousands of girls.
I went to see a play with my mom in my recent dream.
I was with my mom going to the circus.
So I was kind of carrying this belly in my arms and then this umbilical cord was attached to me and then it turned into a white cat.
I'm a mouse. Old then.
I was about 7 years old.
My mom and I are on a miniature train going around.
It was this really, really dimly lit room. You could barely see, but there was like the outline of this woman.
My mom and I are on a miniature train going around these beautiful gardens, and there's a green field to the left.
When I looked at my baby, I realized that it was made of clay.
And then it turned into a white cat. It was a big white cat. And the cat kept on trying to get away. And I was trying to kind of calm it down. And was holding it quite hard so that it wouldn't jump out of my arms and kind of rip the umbilical cord out of me.
And it was in the form of a giant jelly baby. You know, the lolly.
There's flock of magpies on the green field.
There were these two people that I somehow met. They were both siblings.
And then I asked my mum for some help, and so she was kind of carrying the cat, which was attached to me, as I was, like, going to the bathroom.
And then I looked and asked her if she could pick me up because I didn't give birth, and she said, no, you can catch the tram home.
Then my mother came and asked me about her time in hospital. For some stupid reason, I was talking gibberish. I couldn't understand what she was saying, and whatever was coming out of my mouth sounded quite odd.
And then we kind of cut to just, like, giving birth, and that happened quite quickly, and it was very painless. It just kind of slipped out.
This guy owned a swimming pool, used it as a tourist attraction, and his daughter as an example.
So I proceeded to jump on the tram, but then my clay jelly baby started to morph into different objects, like a pile of books or a water bottle.
And then it turned into the white cat.
His daughter was a very good swimmer and she demonstrated to everyone what to do and how easy it was, supposedly. I was friends with the daughter. I don't think she liked working for her dad. It was hard work.
So we go under the tunnel. We come out the other end and they're looking at me with these red eyes.
I was looking at my mum's house.
So I had this little baby and it was a girl. Actually, when I was carrying my belly, I had a feeling coming baby, the belly, that it was a girl, and when I gave birth it was very quick and it was a girl, and
they wanted to play in a band together.
And she lives on a farm and we're in her house and she has these huge big French windows looking out to the fields, and we were just in the living room next to the big French windows.
She was very cute, and then I looked down at her hands and I saw that her fingers were like really long, and I counted them, and there were six.
And then behind me, my mum's gone, she's not on the train anymore. All I know is that the birds took her, and not
not giving her back.
And she's like rocking back and forth, and she's rocking a baby, and then like in the dream, you know, I realize that the baby is me.
I
was also friends with one guy. He left the church and he came to the pool with his family to show that he was strong enough and independent enough to go through with the swim.
And then I counted it again and I was wrong. There was actually 9 or 10 fingers on her left hand. But I didn't really mind. I just kind of loved this little thing.
So I'm just like being rocked back and forth, but it's like kind of homely, like old school carer type. Like matronly but like sweet type. Working back and forth and like singing me this really old school lullaby, which I used to know all the words to when I was a kid from the dream, but I've forgotten about it now.
But the thing was that their parents,
and then really quickly the baby wasn't a baby anymore, and the baby was like a teenager, maybe like 18, and
their parents didn't want them to.
The people were divided into age group. I found my mom very far away.
She wasn't very nice. She was quite selfish, and just selfish, and I knew that.
He got up ready to start. His family started chanting, Jesus is with you, Jesus is with you.
I decided to just get out of the tree and leave my mom up in the tree.
And then my mom said, Lois, that is just a complete waste of fake.
Didn't want them to, and had implemented some sort of UV system which prevented them from playing together.
Well, I was disappointed that I hadn't had the opportunity to just kind of go and dare at her, and that actually she had come out like this fully developed young adult who maybe was not the kind of person that I would like.
I was flying over the village where I live, the little town.
Flying extremely slow.
Flying through the countryside. I'm on a plane that you can see some clouds, and then basically below it is just a mess of colour. Kind of like a Marc Chagall painting, you could say.
When I started off, I'd have to swim through the air.
And as I was flying around, Jimi Hendrix came up to me flying as well.
I'd just be like a few feet above the ground, waving my arms madly if I could ever manage to paddle fast enough, it seemed. But I could still move somewhat. And I got better at it over the years of my life.
And I looked at him and he looked at me, and I just freaked out. And I looked down towards the ground of my hometown, where I could hide because it was so real.
All of a sudden, all these really small, little hot air balloon bubbles came in. They were bubbles, but all in the shape of hot air balloons, like little hot air balloons.
There was this old panel van, so I headed straight for that.
It got to a point where there was a kind of an element of daring in my body involved in starting to fly, in which I would just jump off something where if I wasn't able to fly, I would.
And I remember flying in through the driver's door and just sitting there really quietly thinking, you can't see me, you can't see me. And then all of a sudden, she flew in through the other window.
In a World War II kind of plane, flying through the country of drive.
We ran outside into the garden where the fields are, and there was this old-fashioned hot air balloon bobbing along the ground. With two men in it, and they were like pulling this wooden contraption on it, like steering it, and they were wearing black caps and like waistcoats. They're like old farmers, it looked like, and they were on the hot air balloon.
Like jumping off a tall building or something would kind of flip the switch, and then I kind of have to fly. So I was kind of tricking the dream or tricking my body into starting to fly. I was on top of a water tank, a rural water tank, and I just quietly stepped off it completely casually.
So we're traveling on this rocket called Turtle.
Something seems out of place with the look of the airplane, and it's flying extremely slow.
This rocket called Turtle, the back of it, and we're like traveling along one of the Mediterranean. And it was really beautiful, and we're cruising along on top of the water.
The World War II fighter plane.
There's all this blue water and
flying through the countryside.
And it was really beautiful, and we're cruising along above the water.
Landing occasionally, having beautiful lunches in these little cottages, and taking off again.
El grupo parece extraño con el avión. Está volando sumamente bajo.
I think one of my pet dogs is flying with me.
So we went there together, but as our form of transportation, I used my towel to make a giant paper aeroplane, but it was made out of towel instead of paper.
There's a lot of whining sound from the air. I looked up and saw three aeroplanes. Then I noticed how slow it is flying. I start thinking to myself how amazing it would be to see a plane crash. Out of each aeroplane fell a giant bladed cylinder with bladed holes in it, something like a giant circular cheese grater, tumbling through the air and making a whistling noise. Part of me was ruined by the crash.
And eventually the plane kind of different kinds of turbulence, but the turbulence slows down in slow motion and really softly.
En el mismo momento en que noto lo bajo que vuela el avión.
And then all of a sudden, this gigantic, big white statue of Michael Caine appears, like out of the water, and we're on a collision course for it. We all kind of like start panicking because there's nothing to do.
Pienso en lo emocionante que sería verlo chocar. Just as I had thought, the plane turns and stops in midair. It then points its nose downward and, as if controlled like a puppet, its nose bangs on the ground twice before it then flies away out of sight.
The plane flies into the mountain.
Stepped off it and I fell down and landed on the ground, flat on my arm, with a loud whack.
We smash into the statue.
Did it bend the lucky second behind
pulling this wooden contraption, and coming out of the wooden contraption with all these little bubbles, the hot air balloons.
I remember feeling excited at the notion of the plane crashing in front of me, and disappointed when it flew off without actually crashing.
The plane plowed into this mountain. Turns out the mountain is all made of marshmallow. And it's all sort of bulbous colours.
And so we were just in the field of this with this hot air balloon, and these two men in there, and we were just surrounded by all these hot air balloon bubbles that they were making.
Why? A couple of other guys basically like some losses and start climb through the marshmallow and literally dig through it. Hello, my name's Giles Flynn.
And I'm Patsy.
Evgenia Brodsky.
Hannah Silver.
Ben. Philippe Perez.
Cicely Nagasawa, just Japanese to English.
Sophie Mitsunakis.
My name's Sam, and
I'm Luxley Wilson.
This is a dream for Martin.
Lois Conlon. Taylor.
Jupiter.
Olga from California.
Kate.
This is Tanya's dream.
Hi, my name is Julian. Here is my dream.
End of transmission. Find us on the internet, radia.fm. Over and out.
Thank you.
MuTeC Montreal, the most important festival for digital creativity and electronic music in North America, returns for its 23rd edition at Quartier de Spectacle. From Tuesday, August 23rd to Sunday, August 28th, vibe to the rhythm of more than 100 local and international artists such as Caterina Barbieri, Coro Novoa, Koreatown Acid, Luke Slater, Max Cooper, and Nicola Cruz. MuTeC also has a program dedicated to professionals with its MuTeC Forum and Market, which consists of 4 days of exchanges and events centered around digital creation. The complete program and tickets are now available at a preferential rate at montreal.mutech.org. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Yes, sir, you already know what it is. Ladies and gentlemen, in the city of Montreal and worldwide, if you're tuned in online, this is THG Entertainment on CKUT 90.3, back again with this week's episode of Whose Vibe Is It Anyways? I'm here with Colin Hassel on the drums as well. DJ Rossi Ross on the mix is always ready to throw down. We're going to have him back on. We like to pause for dramatic silence around here just to see who's awake and sturdy at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You know what I'm saying?
Listen, it's important to keep Montreal on their toes. And if you're on your toes right now, Montreal, please come and visit us on Instagram at THT Entertainment, where you'll find the very latest of what we've got going on. Big shout out to CKUT, as always, for letting us do this one more time. It's a special day in the studio here at THT Entertainment. We have got resident THT Don, lead artist, man, myth, legend, Mr. International, our brother Mutari is in the studio. Who's